Welcome to Topple Uncaged. I'm Steve Topple, and over the next 20 minutes, I'll be bringing you the quickest firing news roundup of the week. I'll be getting down and dirty with a very special guest going through some big stories. I'll be taking a part of this week's Question Time, and also I'll be bringing you some of the biggest, most banging political tunes going. So, lock and load, people. Let's go.
Uncaged.
Try to explain your mind, I know what's happening here. One minute it's love and suddenly it's like a battlefield.
What's up, everyone? I am Steve Topple. It is Sunday, the 3rd of March, and that can only mean one thing. It's this week's edition of Topple Uncaged. Do you know the saddest thing about the whole Labour fiasco regarding anti-Semitism, regarding Chris Williamson, regarding the independent group that's blown up this week? It's not any of those things. It's the fact that my Twitter timeline is littered with Labour Party members and supporters tearing strips off each other now. Literally, people who have been friends for years, who have the same political opinion as mine, are all now falling out. It's about sign this letter, don't sign this letter. Listen to Momentum, don't listen to Momentum. Look at what Owen Jones said. Owen Jones is right. Owen Jones is wrong. It's absolute chaos, and it is one of the most disheartening things, not even as a Jeremy Corbyn Labour supporter, because I'm not, it's one of the most disheartening things I've seen in a long time. What's going on? Surely if you are all Jeremy Corbyn supporters, then you basically stand for all the same principles and values, do you not? Why are you letting this divide and conquer tactic, which it is being used intentionally by some quarters to split all you lot up, why are you letting that phase you? You know how much we need a Jeremy Corbyn government, and yet you are allowing external forces to split you up, pull you apart, and ultimately undermine the Corbyn project in its entirety. So, here is my advice for all of you. Pin back your ears and listen up. Fuck Momentum. Fuck Owen Jones. Better go and get your honor. Fuck the rest of those middle-class carpet-bagging journalists. Fuck what any other Labour MPs say, unless they're on Corbyn's side. You all need to unite behind the leader of your party now, and quickly, because this situation is rapidly deteriorating, and as Jordan Sparks said, it is turning into a battlefield. Guys, please, for the sake of this country, sort it out. And on this week's podcast, we'll be talking about that and a lot, lot more. So, let's get going. The fastest news segment in the UK, it's Plucked News. Yes, it is the UK's quickest news roundup. It is Plucked News. 5 news stories, 5 minutes, plus a few more at the end, of course, giving you all the information you need. If you're ready, get steady. Let's go. First off, we're off to my mate Alex Tiffin at Universal Credit Sufferer, and he reported that sick DWP staff harass benefit claimants in hospital. Yes, this is of course the story of Islington, where it's been uncovered that Department for Work and Pensions are sending staff into hospitals to check on sick patients about bank account details and payments. Islington Council are rightly outraged, but I think more of the outrage was on social media, because this is absolutely staggering. The hostile environment for sick and disabled people, where an Oxford University study found that 590 people took their own life, in part because of the work capability assessment, just continues unabated. But this is perhaps the peak of the hostile environment we have seen yet. I mean, it's absolutely staggering that the DWP seriously think they could do this and no one would kick up a stink. So far, none of this has made the national news. It's only been locally reported, but this is a huge story and an unbelievable example of how rancid the Department for Work and Pensions under the Conservative government has become. I've said it before and I'll say it again, the DWP is no longer fit for purpose. It does not need a review. It needs razing to the ground. And for story number two, I'm off to my mates at Evolve Politics, and they reported that Brandon Lewis confirms he has suspended Tory councillor Martin York following our story exposing the fact that he was in the leadership team for a racist, anti-Semitic, Islamophobic Facebook group. Yes, this is of course the story of Martin York, who has been suspended by the Conservative Party over a Facebook group he helped run, which contains some absolutely disgusting comments about various groups of people. But of course, this is all against the backdrop of the Labour's current anti-Semitism crisis. Now, a lot of people on Twitter are arguing that the Labour anti-Semitism crisis has got more coverage than the Tory Islamophobia crisis, with some people going as far as saying that Islamophobia is actually worse in the Conservative Party than anti-Semitism is in the Labour Party. While of course there's up for debate and all forms of racial hatred are abhorrent, Laura Koonsberg didn't do herself any favours this week either, because when she tweeted about Tory party Islamophobia, she said, "This is on a different political scale, but Tories also have a problem here. Different political scale? I'm sorry, what exactly do you mean by that, Miss Koonsberg?" Again, people jumped on it saying a case of mainstream media bias. And my mate Joshua Funnel at the Canary did a brilliant article on this, link in the show notes. But essentially, of course, what we are seeing is bias towards the Conservative Party. It is, it's clear as the nose on your face, really, isn't it? The furore over Labour's anti-Semitism problem absolutely eclipses the Tories' Islamophobia one. I wonder why that is. And kind of on that note, here's story number three, and I'm off to The Intercept, and they reported that, exclusive, Ilhan Omar speaks out on her Twitter scandal, anti-Semitism, and a progressive foreign policy. This is, of course, the story of Democratic Senator Ilhan Omar, who sparked controversy in the US when she said that Israeli money unduly influences American politics. Now, she has been branded anti-Semitic for saying this. However, Mehdi Hassan, brilliant journalist, has done an excellent interview with her on The Intercept, where they're going on all sorts of issues, but not least, confront the anti-Semitism issue head on. Now, once again, we have the caveats that the Democratic Party, the same as the Labour Party in the UK, does of course have issues of anti-Semitism. But this is blatant weaponising of it by her opponents for political gain. You cannot tell me the amount of Israeli money that flies into the US via organisations such as AIPAC, and the amount of US money that flies out over to Israel for their military programmes, is not cash influencing politics, is it? This is a blatant attempt, as it is with Jeremy Corbyn in the UK, to shut down politicians who the establishment consider too progressive. As I say, it's anti-Semitism being used as a weapon for political gain, and it needs to be recognised as such. Next up for story number four, I'm off to Business Green. Yes, Business Green. And they reported a climate of urgent complacency. This is, of course, in the same month that we had the hottest winter day on record. We also had the first climate change debate in Parliament for nearly 2 years. How many MPs turned up? I think it was around 40. And, of course, the thrust of Business Green's post was that it was outrageous that so few MPs turned up to what is one of the biggest catastrophes a human species is facing. We all know the background to this intergovernmental panel on climate change saying that we've got to 2030 to change our ways, otherwise we go past the point of no return. But essentially, the lack of MPs, whether they were watching the debate or whether they were too busy doing other things or not, is irrelevant. The lack of MPs shows the disdain and the lack of concern over climate change in some quarters of our parliamentary system. I mean, we've got 11 years, according to the IPCC. 11 years! And yet we're banging on about Brexit, banging on about Labour anti-Semitism, banging on about Tory Islamophobia, and in about 11 years' time, we could be absolutely fucked. Well, more fucked than we are already. The lack of politicians at the climate change debate exposed the lack of concern these people have. But moreover, in my opinion, it shows that many of them are such Westminster gravy trainers, they're more concerned with making a quick buck than our children's future. And for story number five, I'm off to Jeremy Corbyn's Twitter feed, and he tweeted that people are dying on our streets while property speculators leave luxury flats empty. Make no mistake about it, homelessness is not inevitable. Now, I may mock up Corbyn's voice, but this is actually brilliant from him. And do you want to know why it's brilliant? Because there's no mention of affordable housing anywhere in this 2 minute video. What Corbyn specifically honed in on was council housing, saying that the Labour government would invest the money it is needed for council housing. Yes, council housing, not affordable housing, which is 65% of market rate, but council, proper council housing. This small detail is a significant shift from Labour in its rhetoric surrounding the housing crisis in this country, and it is an extremely important one. Meanwhile, interesting little fact for you here, over in Venezuela, its government has just completed the building of 2.5 million social homes, and it's only halfway through its building programme of these. Now, what's the common denominator between people attacking Maduro and people attacking Corbyn? Could it possibly be that the establishment is scared of them? And having that time to mention nearly 11,000 people signing a petition for a vote of no confidence in Deputy Labour leader Tom Watson. Now, of course, I couldn't possibly endorse this petition, no. But of course, the link will be in the show notes. Sign, sign, sign. And I haven't even got time to talk about the documentary Three Identical Strangers. Did you see that shit? Separating twins at birth as some sort of social and psychological experiment? Well, to be honest, nothing should surprise us about the US and the government over there. I mean, MK Ultra was a conspiracy theory, wasn't it? No, it actually happened. And of course, with all these stories, I want to know, what are they doing now to us that we don't know about? And I haven't really got time, but I'm going to do it. I need to give a shout out to my mate Seema Chandwani, who has just been elected Vice Chair of London Labour. Yes, get in. Good move. If you know Seema, you know the backstory to this. It's been a torrid journey for her to get here, but big props to you, Seema. And I haven't really got time to talk about the anti-government protests that are all kicking off in Algeria. I'd keep your eye on these developments. This could be another big story about to blow up. Algeria, anti-government protests, look it up. And I'm going to fit in a quick shout-out for the 10-year anniversary of the Blacklist scandal. There's going to be a big demonstration at Parliament Wednesday, 6th of March, 5 p.m. John McDonnell will be speaking. Blacklisters, get down there. And I haven't got time to talk about it, but I really must fit it in with the trade bill being debated in the House of Lords next week and uproar about the possible implications for US imports of chlorinated chicken, genetically modified beef, and the creeping degradation of our global agriculture systems. Boris Johnson has agreed to be chlorinated in a bid to boost trade with the US. No, he hasn't really. It's a brilliant bit of satire by my mate John Shaftow at the Canary. Check it out, link in the show notes. But now, I'm off to do some... dissecting this week's top stories. It's me, free-flying with... My guest on this week's podcast is an extremely interesting character, and it's breaking the mould a bit for me, because yes, he's involved in football. I know, listeners, don't be too surprised. This man is a sports writer who has comedic elements to his prose. He used to be a former city boy, and I'm not talking about the football club, I'm talking about the City of London. Also, he is politically unaligned, so what we are getting from him is a completely unbiased view of things. This guy is great. I've already got to know him quite extensively. He's a lovely man. I'm pleased to introduce on Top Lung Cage, Keith Palmer. Keith, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's a treat to have you on. This is going to be great.
The pleasure is mine.
Thank you so much. Right, as always, with the free flying with section, we have three stories to rattle through. The first one, Keith, we are going to deal with is, of course, the story over right to rent, which broke this week. The Supreme Court ruled that this policy where landlords were forced to carry out status checks on people's immigration, and obviously this was discriminating against asylum seekers and refugees because it then meant they couldn't get properties. The Supreme Court ruled that this was illegal and discriminatory. The government, of course, just shrugged its shoulders and said, We disagree with this, but it's kicked off a huge debate surrounding this. I mean, Keith, do you think there are some parallels, if you like, to be drawn between this scandal and the whole Windrush scandal that has developed over several years now? Are there parallels to be drawn here?
Not sure if it's parallels. I think there's reminders of the past going on here. I mean, this hostile environment that's been put in place just lately. It seems to be going back to the old days of the 1960s of no blacks, no Irish, no dogs. And I just cannot believe that they're making such decisions when they're supposed to be trying to make themselves popular, the politicians. But everything they touch at the moment seems to have a degree of being totally and utterly out of touch with the people.
I mean, why do you think this is?
There are so many answers to that, Steve, so many answers. Politics is broken in this country, basically. I don't think the people have any respect or any confidence that any single party is going to do the right job. When you consider the amount of deficit we've got going on, and it's totally and utterly ignored. I think if you could put a stuffed dummy in number 10, and it would probably do a similar job as these clowns. Now, better. when you watched all the politicians this week resigning and moving on over to this independence party, they're all sitting up the back of the parliament taking selfies, and it's almost as if they're more important than the policies. Now they've got 17 million people who voted for Brexit, and it looks to me like that whatever side you're on or whatever your beliefs are, they're just moving towards whatever they want to do. It's almost like the Chelsea goalkeeper last week when he said he's not coming off. They're not going to do anything the public want. They're going to get their own way, and they're going to do it their own way. And we can see from everything they touch at the moment, including this policy about renting places, it's a mess. The whole thing is a mess. It needs leadership.
I want to move on because you touched a bit on our next topic in that last section, which, and we'll move on to Brexit. Now, obviously, the latest fiasco, if you want to call it that, from it's my girlfriend Nicola Jeffrey called it the prevailing failings of Chris Grayling, because this man, everything he touched turns to shit, essentially. We've had this fiasco this week with Eurotunnel, where they've had to settle out of court for $33 million. The government has handed them because of the whole nonsense over the ferries, etc., etc., etc. Where do you sit on Brexit, Keith? Because, I mean, your life is fascinating. You're from working class council estate background, someone who moved up to end up working in the City of London, but someone who has the foresight and the strength of character, if you like, to remember and recognise and always go by the values of where you came from. I mean, what's your take on Brexit, and overall, what's your opinion?
It's been a complete and utter mess from beginning to end. That's if there's going to be an end. They will blame everything on Brexit now. They will blame I don't know, the length of your hair to walking down the road in the wrong manner on Brexit. And I honestly believe, if you read the financial papers, you will see every day 150 jobs lost here, 2,000 jobs lost there, a factory closing down over here. None of it's being amalgamated and pushed at the public, because they then want to blame it all on Brexit when it's all finished. And they can say, see, we were right. But the truth is, nobody knows what's going to happen. And all the premises that Brexit was sold on from the beginning was all to do with kind of mild racism. People coming over in droves. We're going to be knee-deep in Romanian people and Bulgarian people. It was absolute rubbish. Surely Brexit should have been about quality of life and how you live your life on a daily basis. Yeah. But Mr. Grayling, who, to give him his right name, he's called the Right Honourable Chris Grayling, yet nothing he ever does is. He's a man who's a little bit lost, actually, Chris Grayling. He's... if you look back through his jobs, starting with studying history at Cambridge, so surely if he studied history, he should know all about the Windrush situation. He was a member of the Social Democratic Party, with emphasis on democratic. Oh. He was Shadow Secretary for Work and Pensions, with emphasis on work. He was also the Secretary of State for Justice, none of which he's integrated into any project he's ever worked on.
No, absolutely. That's a lovely summing up of his CV. Brilliant. It's very true. I mean, he is a disaster from start to finish. Can I ask you, you don't have to answer, we live in a democracy, obviously, but so which way did you vote? Did you vote leave or remain?
I voted to come out on one premise.
Yep.
And I've travelled all around Europe, and I love various countries, and I've worked in fairly, you know, some lovely countries in Europe. I have no issues with colour, creed, or background, or whatever. I grew up believing this country was Great Britain, and what we are now is a lapdog for a country to our west, in terms of who to be friends with and who to have wars with. And we have our tummy tickled by a country to the right of us who had to kind of get bowed out by us during the last World War. So I don't know how we can call ourselves great anymore if we're financially and morally dependent on two other countries. Now, I'd love to see England go back to the, well, Britain, go back to the situation where they actually stand on their own two feet. If our politicians are any good, they'll go out and win us more orders in terms of imports and export. And we can go back to a day when we're actually an independent force. A lot of people may call that leaning towards the right. But I think when you have no party, then you can go left and right as you see fit.
That kind of pulls us into our last story slightly, but we're going off now into one of your biggest loves, which is football, but we're going to talk about it in a slightly different context. So people will have obviously seen, because you can't escape it, because it's all over every front page constantly at the moment is, of course, the Labour anti-Semitism crisis. This is a political hot potato at the minute, and contrastingly, we're now having come out about problems with Islamophobia in the Conservative Party. But switching it up a bit, going towards football, there's always been sort of overtones and a narrative fed that there are issues with racism and anti-Semitism and homophobia, for that matter, as well, within football over the years. I mean, we're in 2019 now, Keith. Do you think, like in Labour, anti-Semitism is sold to us as a problem? Do you think these issues of ethnicity and religion and sexuality are still an issue within football? Does that still exist as much as it used to?
Well, I support the team that's mostly castigated for adopting a Jewish persona. I'm a big Tottenham Hotspur fan. Mm-hmm. But I've always hated the presence of any politics or any kind of sectarianism coming into football. I just don't want it or understand it. In the days when football was football, before the money came along, the anti-Semitism was still there. Saw it firsthand many, many times. But it's all a bit of a kind of a silly story, really. I mean, the anti-Semitism that's going through the Labour Party at the moment is actually hideous, whereas football's almost kind of contained football racism in many, many forms. The throwing of fruit at black players years ago, you don't really get that anymore. I think we've all burned that one to bits. We're now arguing every time there's a big game with Tottenham about the Y word. And to an extent, the Spurs fans have handled that brilliantly in that they parody the insult and then send it back as a kind of a form of standing together. I don't see much of that going on in any of the parties at the moment.
No, and so, I mean, what's your take on them?
It's two different stories, what's going on in politics and what's going on in football now. The football one only really rears its head every time there's a big game. Chelsea have come in for a lot of criticism with their dealings with black and Jewish people, but that's up for that's up to that club to handle that situation. I mean, after all, they've got a Jewish Russian owner who should have done a lot more to try and combat that. When it comes out into the public domain, and we're talking about a political party that's got anti-Semitism written all over it, to be honest with you, I think they should be looked at and they should be asked, how deep is this? How many people are actually perpetrating this? And maybe sometimes they'll bring in a subject like this to actually deflect from the real issues that are going on. You know, the way I've looked at it myself, it only seems to be a very, very small minority of people in the Labour Party who are doing this, which doesn't make it right. But there's a bigger picture here going on. I mean, this Brexit situation at the moment is about to implode in our faces. But just to give you a little story, a 12-year-old girl said to me the other day, "What's the European Union?" So I said, well, when I lived in Luxembourg, I had a girlfriend who worked for the European Parliament. And every day she came in, they had ideas. And by 12 o'clock the next day, there was a quango made up of her friends and acquaintances all earning the fortune. So it's actually a big boys' club. And we're talking about exiting the boys' club. Only two of the big boys are trying to make it as awkward as possible for us to come out. So I told her then about the £39 billion that we're going to have to pay to the boys' club and how lots of the other boys in Greece and Italy all want to come out, but they're going to stick two fingers up and say, we're not paying. So she said to me then, why are we paying £39 billion to a boys' club that's going to be broken up within a year? And they say out of the mouths of babes, but that's a far better answer than I could have given.
Keith, that's brilliant. And that is an excellent story to wrap up your appearance on Top of Lung Cage. Brilliant story, love it. And very, 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 very true. I think we will, the EU, I give it another 10 years, if that. And I think it's going to be game over, to use a pun, as it were. Keith Palmer, it has been a pleasure to have you on the podcast. Really, really interesting stuff. And great to speak to you finally. Keith, thank you.
My pleasure, Stephen. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Taking down this week's BBC QT, it's question time. Topple chirps back. Well, this week's edition of Question Time was pure tabloid gutter journalism. There was an absolute pile-on on Barry Gardner, the lone Labour voice on the panel. It did make for quite uneasy television, actually, with Fiona Bruce being a veritable BBC Rebecca Brooks, and everyone ignoring the Tory on the panel. The Tories, meanwhile, by the way, responsible for 30 deaths a day under the DWP's watch, the institutionally racist Windrush scandal, and homeless people dying in their hundreds. But no, let's focus on Barry Gardner, shall we? It was very, very unpleasant to watch, and very unbecoming of the BBC. Well, actually, no, it's not unbecoming of the BBC. It's what we come to expect from that shit show. Anyway, what have you got for me this week, tabloid question time? First question, please.
Does Jeremy Corbyn's handling of anti-Semitism make him unfit to be Prime Minister?
And to carry on the tabloid theme, a question that could have come straight from the Sun. Look, apart from the caveats, as Barry Gardner pointed out, that Labour didn't deal with the anti-Semitism crisis very well when it started, they now have robust measures in place, they're working with the police, investigations are happening, and that Chris Williamson, wrong or right, was suspended very quickly over his alleged anti-Semitism. I'm one of probably millions of people who've had to say this now. Corbyn is a lifelong anti-racist. If you don't take my word for it, what about the 200 Jewish people who signed an open letter in support of Corbyn this week, and the various Jewish organisations within the Labour Party who also support him? But you know, hey, never mind about the institutionally racist, institutionally incompetent Theresa May government. Let's not worry about them. Next question, please.
In the week of the warmest winter weather on record, why, following a turnout of thousands of school children to protest over climate change in action, why was Parliament empty for the debate, particularly on the government benches?
It was an absolutely disgraceful state of affairs, as I said earlier in the podcast. But when you have MPs, some of which are shareholders in fossil fuel companies, some of which have links to them, and when you have a government which gives subsidies to the oil and gas industry and the fracking industry, then what could we come to expect? Climate change is not being taken seriously at all. What I would like to see in an ideal world is the Labour Party and the Green Party get together on this and do some work on it together. I'm not sure that's ever going to happen though, but that would be great. But I think a lady in the audience summed it up best when she said that, well, climate change, you're all too busy bickering about Brexit. Now, if I was in the Question Time audience, there's two questions I'd like to ask the panel, please. Do they think that The Last Leg, Channel 4's Friday night comedy flagship programme, has turned into nothing more than disability carpetbagging, making money off disabled people's misery after hosting Anna Soubry the other week? Moreover, does it have any shred of credibility left, and should anyone be watching it anymore? And I would also like to know from the panel, do they think that The Guardian and New Media commentators, who used to support Chris William quite vocally, even having him on his podcast, but now who seemingly have turned after their support for his suspension this week, have they exposed themselves to be the, like The Last Leg, class carpet baggers and fair weather friends, essentially running with any narrative to keep their lousy careers going that they really are? That's it for me. I'm not looking forward to next week's Question Time. It'll probably be a bit like The Daily Star. Dissecting this week's top stories, it's me, Free Flying, with... My guest on this week's podcast is one of the most exciting acts to emerge in recent times. His smooth, soulful voice puts me a bit in mind of Maxwell D'Angelo, that kind of era of neo-soul. But moreover, he has just dropped the most fantastic mixtape, which showcases his ability as a songwriter absolutely stunningly. He is incredible. I'm really excited to have him on Top Lung Cage. It's the incredible Indy Allen. Indy, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast.
Yeah, man. Much love, Iris. Speaking to Steve. Much love.
Thank you for coming on. Now, this mixtape, it is absolutely brilliant. It's a must-have already, and it's only literally been out a day. But you're not new to the scene. Your first record dropped in 2016, and then, of course, last year, 2018, your song Catch a Fire absolutely blew up. It was on rotation. It's been on loop on One Extra in the UK. But to me, I mean, your sound and your songwriting ability, it sounds like you're not new to this at all. There's a real sort of deep rooted musicality with what you do, and you come across in your writing and your performance like you've been doing this year. So, I mean, how far back does music stretch for you? When did you first start your songwriting and your singing and performing, as it were? When did that begin?
Well, you know, Steve, I started long time ago, you know. The first experience I had musically was, you know, seeing my brother practicing for church events and, you know, church rehearsals and everything there. And that really inspired me in terms of the type of music that he was practicing at the time. You know, I would always be around him when he's rehearsing and, you know, wanting to harmonize and everything there and learning these songs. And it would be a lot of traditional church songs. And then separate and apart from that now, we listen to a lot of Boyz II Men, a lot of R&B, a lot of different genres coming up in us. So it was from them time there, from the primary school era, coming up through high school, and then we decide, say, all right, we're going to move to Kingston after that. So after about 9th grade, then I start take music really serious, you know, after falling in love with it for the first time, seeing my brother, you know, in church singing and everything there. So it's from them time there till now. And it has been a really great journey since, you know. Can't complain at all, Steve.
It has. I mean, as I said in the introduction, though, you are an extremely, extremely exciting artist, not least for your vocals. Your voice is absolutely phenomenal. I'd urge listeners, there's a cover you do on YouTube of Fix You, and I'd urge listeners to go and find it, because it's absolutely beautiful. Your voice, you flip between this smooth, silky tenor, then you go into a falsetto, and you flip back again. It's just fantastic, and your interpretation of the song as well is absolutely brilliant. I mean, as I said in the introduction, you put me in mind of that era of soul singers like Maxwell and D'Angelo, with the power and the quality and of your voice and the tone, but also your interpretation and songwriting ability. I don't want to sort of put you on the spot, and obviously you may not have anyone in mind, but who influenced you, if anyone, vocally? Was there any artists that stood out for you?
Yeah, man, definitely, man. From them time there, as I said, you know, as you mentioned, you have the Maxwell and the D'Angelo and those type of sounds, you know, combined with, you know, the Marleys and everything. Those were the influences that, you know, crafted my sound, in a sense. And, you know, I give thanks for being exposed to those kind of music.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You can hear the Marley influence coming through. Absolutely. I mean, you're a real talent. I want to talk about the mixtape now. Indie Me Name dropped on Saturday, 23rd of February. It's an absolutely phenomenal piece of work. But I'm kind of curious, because I know you're planning, I think, on releasing an album later this year. What was your thinking behind sort of dropping a mixtape as opposed to dropping a full album first? Where did that idea come from for you?
All right, it was a thing that we never wanted to, and I say we as in, you know, my creative partner in crime, you know, Knox, we spoke about this a lot, you know. We never wanted to release a next body of work without growing that brand, growing that core fan base and thing. And for all of the people who never know who Indie is, and, you know, I mean, I felt like I wanted to reach more people, you know, introduce more people to who Indie is, and you know, kind of show that, you know, Indie is not just somebody that's one-dimensional, you know. There's a lot of sides and a certain depth to, you know, what Indie is capable of, what Indie has to say in terms of the message. And the mixtape, we wanted to achieve just that with the mixtape, you know, being out of the box.
No, absolutely. I mean, what you've done so well with Indie Me Name is that no one can put you in a box with this, because musically it is extremely diverse. You've got tracks like Kings and Queens, which has that real neo-soul, again, D'Angelo feel about it.
For real,
you then go to Everything Takes Money, which is while it's still neo-soul, it's got a real sort of conscious theme and commentary about the system that we're living under. Musically, you then flip it up again with the beautiful track Father's Day, which is a kind of dancehall come Afrobeat R&B, sound that's really big in the UK at the minute. And then you go to Dub School, which is a proper kind of roots, reggae, stroke, dub mashup. It's absolutely brilliant the way you're flipping across musical genres. Was this intentional, or is it a reflection of who you are as an artist?
Yeah, man, it was intentional, man, because as you say, it is a reflection of who I am as an artist, you know. And these are some of the things that influence that, you know, in terms of the type of music that I listen to. It's a very wide span across all genres. I listen to hip hop, I listen to dancehall, I listen to reggae, you know, the dub culture. As you say, you mentioned the track, which is No Dream, Dub School. You know, having a sound like that, it's all a part of the culture. And, you know, I wanted to just show how versatile indies, how there are many sides, you know, to these stories, the message that we have to tell. And, I mean, it's just how we choose to portray the message, you know. We can portray the message in a different styles, shape, form, you know, different feel. And, I mean, it's just being creative, being true to myself as an individual, as indie, you know, being true to the type of music that I was brought up listening to. And it was just a showcase of all of that encapsulated in one introduction, Indie My Name.
No, for real. And the Indie My Name showcases your sort of multifaceted abilities as a musician absolutely brilliantly. I mean, what also comes across on it, and it's a joy to hear, is you are so vocally dexterous. I mean, on especially on Dub School, the rate you knock out syllables is absolutely fantastic. You are extremely talented and as I say, dexterous as a vocalist as well. Incredible skills there. I mean, what also grabbed me about the mixtape was that every track has a story to tell. There's an overriding deep-rooted thought process obviously behind this, because every track tells a story, and it makes the whole mixtape a complete package. Just for the listeners at home, I mean, take a couple of stories that inspired you and are behind some of the tracks. Just pick out a couple for me and explain to the listeners what exactly they were about.
Alright, so the first one we don't want to touch upon is Father's Day. You know, I think as a musician and as a son, you know, seeing the love and appreciation and energy and hard work my father put in and thing, and looking in the industry and, you know, life in general, it's almost like I never see anybody else around me kind of paying enough tribute or, you know, homage to all the good fathers out there. So I decided to, you know, contribute my whole experience, and, you know, that would be my salute or my congrats or my yo, good job, you know, to all of the fathers out there who's doing very well, you know, raising them youths and taking care of them family and thing. Everything Takes Money was also a next tune where it was based off a conversation that I was having with a friend at the time, and it was almost like, you know, boy, For upcoming artists, like, we face a lot of expenses, and, you know, every single thing what we do in either the career or whether it be personal life, you know, you take money to achieve. And, you know, these are some of the things that came out into the songs. You know, the come up was about my journey from before my start to where I'm now.
Mixtape has dropped, Indie My Name. There's talk of the album, possibly. Are we going to see an album from you this year? Can you give me the lowdown on that?
Well, I definitely know, say, there's a lot of new music in store now, Steve. But now I got to tell the eyes, say, yo, you know, there will be an album releasing this year. Because there's a lot of work that go into an album, you know. And as a track from the mixtape, say, everything take money, you know. An album take money for do. So, I mean, we're definitely taking our time, you know, me and my team, we're taking the time for, you know, work on the thing, then work on some good music, work on putting in the time and effort, sweat and tears, and make sure, say, when the album is ready, you know, it is well received. So we're not going to say, boy, you know, this year for sure, or next year. We're not putting a timeline on it, because I don't want to feel rushed or feel like I need to rush to put out this body of work. As I said, the mixtape was an introduction to those who don't know me, and, you know, this project will have anybody who listens, you know, getting to know India a little bit more before we even move on to putting out our next project. And yeah, I mean, the album will come in due time, everything in due season. So just go and enjoy the introduction from the mixtape so far, and, you know,
Indy, if the mixtape was just an introduction, then I cannot wait to hear what is going to be on this album. My goodness. You are one of the most exciting vocalists coming out of the Roots and Jamaican scene at the minute. You're also one of the most exciting songwriters. And as I say, if the mixtape is just a sample of what you've got, then I cannot wait to hear more of it. Indy, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. It's been a real treat and a real, real privilege to have you on. Thank you so much.
Yeah, man. Much love and respect, Steve. And it was a pleasure to, you know, be here and for reason with the Iron thing and, you know, talk about some things, talk about the mixtape, you know, talk about what's to come. You know, it's just a joy sharing, you know, what indie is about and, you know, sharing the music and thing. And, you know, I give thanks. So give thanks for inviting me, man. Much love and respect to you, man.
Absolutely, and don't worry, I've enjoyed the mixtape already, and it is going to be on repeat in my house for quite a while to come. Yet, indeed, thank you.
Yeah, man, much love and respect, Steve, and thanks again for having me. Yeah, messing, man, London Massive. This is Vice of the One called Indy Allen. Much love and respect, you know. Thank you for tuning in. Whoa, want you to know this is love. This is love. Ja love you, love you, even in the morning. Ja love you. Living in the wild, wild west, it's not easy to stay alive. We all need money, cause everything takes money. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Greetings to the world. Much love.
Oh my God, how good is Indy Allen? This mixtape is amazing. Trust me, the link for it is in the show notes. You need to download this now. But to give you a taster, here is one of my favourite songs off Indy Me Name. It is a sensational, The Come Up. Check this out, The Come Up.
Well, me never born as a sufferer, me grow with enough. Used to see my brother sing some tune, was a tough. Used to harmonize for go and work on my voice until one day me could have sing me one line, some voice to tune. In the studio, not a bus park beside a shoe store. Back then, in my space, me don't me have to share it. Me want the whole world for know me voice when they hear it. It's a shame, say me have to leave elements for the mission. So sad, say them never see the vision. So me and my cousin jumping on in the sun and go audition for the rising star. I remember when him tell me how you reach far. My blessing come forth out a 9,000 star. Journey goes on and on and on. Yeah, me never start this yesterday. Long time me a tried my way. It goes on and on and on and on and on. Yeah, me never start this yesterday. Long time me a tried my way. It goes on and on and on and on and on and on. Move come Kingston in 2011. Little country boy, Windows 7. I remember the first time seeing Pentatouche life coming like I was in heaven. Never know life music could have been so sweet. So me stop me solo career just for do it. Back then me never understand it. Me think we would have stayed together like the band pan Titanic. Wanna kill and make you stronger. Me to a leap of damages with contracts. Nah look no handout from sponsors. I'm searching the world for the answers to spark some kindness in a mankind. Preaching the hate it's so unkind. We want to really change but on time. The journey goes on and on. Yeah, me never start this yesterday. Long time me I tried my way. It goes on.
And that's it. Episode 16 of Topple Uncaged is done. I would like to thank my fantastic guest this week, the incredible Keith Palmer. You can't follow him on Twitter, sadly. He's not on there. Also, the sensational Indy Allen. Follow him on Twitter. It's at Indy MI Name. As usual, behind the scenes, thank you to the love of my life, the gorgeous Nicola Jeffrey. Follow her on Twitter. It's at Nicola C. Jeffrey. Thank you to my man in the booth, my sound engineer, Gav Pause. Follow him on Twitter. It's at Pause Radio. And last but not least, my in-house singer. It's Ray Star Music. Follow her on Twitter. It's at Ray_Star113. Thank you to Thneri. Become a member. Join us. I'm off to knock some Labour Party member heads together. We'll see you next week.
Uncaged.